Drink. Drink it.
It burns like fire.
The blood of your enemy makes you stronger. Drink.
I'd rather stay weak. Who are you? Where do you come from?
I'm Yor, the hunter. I come from the high mountain.
Thank you for saving Talar. She is the most precious thing in my life. I am Pag. Her father was my king.
Help me cut the choice meats.
Sci-fi action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of A Cure for the Common Craig. My name is the Common Craig. What's your name?
I'm the Common Nicole.
You're the Common Nicole?
Yeah.
The Common Average Nicole?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, welcome to the show, Common Nicole.
Hi.
All right, well, you didn't really know what to do with that. All right, Nicole, so this episode is a little bit of a departure because the last few episodes were about horror from the 70s, the top 10 horror films of the 1970s. We chose one for each year of the 1970s. Do you remember those episodes, Nicole?
I do.
You should remember them because they were really, really long, Nicole.
It did take a while.
So the goal
through everything.
The goal for this episode today is to do something a little bit different to kind of cleanse the palate, Nicole.
Yeah.
Kind of get you refreshed because, you know, you need a break sometimes from horror. So we got to do something a little different occasionally.
Occasionally.
And hopefully the listener enjoys that as well. But really, the main goal here is to keep this episode under 6 hours in length. That's a goal here for us today.
I think so. I think we can do it.
We'll see. We'll see what we can do here. Uh-huh. But springtime is here. It's outside. That tree right outside the window there is blooming, Nicole. Do you see it?
Yeah, and you have, like, runny nose.
Yeah, I think I'm having some seasonal allergy issues beginning. Yeah, that's kind of normal. Kind of normal for me. So, yeah, it'll be okay, though. Yeah. Springtime's nice, especially this year because the whole pandemic thing, you know, that's been going on for like a year and people are tired of it. So, hopefully, spring and summer, maybe we'll start to snap out of this a little bit and, you know, get back to some form of normal. Although, this is going to linger for a little bit, folks. So, don't go out there and just woohoo! Do whatever you want because you're all gonna die. Except for it's all a hoax anyway, right, Nicole?
Whatever. I'm just gonna stay inside.
Yes, we.
I mean, I'm gonna go outside. I'm just gonna stay away from people.
People, yes. We don't really like people anyway, except for you, the listeners.
Yeah. And our. Just not the masses.
Not the masses.
Yeah.
Were you gonna say our families, Nicole? Like our families.
I do, yes.
I feel like that was just kind of understood. I'm sorry that I tried to bury our families, throw them under the bus.
That's right.
Throw them in with the sweaty masses.
Your sister and brother are going to boycott.
They're going to boycott and they'll never speak to me again.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
Do you want that?
No, I don't. Well, Nicole, let's talk about a little bit of feedback, but this is old feedback, Nicole.
Old.
This is from way back, talking about, do you remember doing an episode that we released on February 8th, Nicole, that was The Ring, And Ring, the Japanese Ring versus the American Ring movie.
Yeah, of
title
course.
Versus title, the remake edition. Do you remember doing that episode, Nicole?
Absolutely.
Well, we got a little feedback from that one that we never really had a chance to touch on because we had all that 70s stuff going on. And my God, we just had to kind of get right to it on most of that 70s stuff, Nicole.
There's no time for chit-chat.
Yeah, we couldn't mess around that much with all that stuff. So, loyal listener and friend Jay, do you know Jay?
I know Jay.
Jay? Well, Jay mentioned that we were talking about the scene in the movie, well, in both movies, really, in both movies, where specifically in the Japanese Ring, Yoichi and Ryuji, do you remember those characters, Nicole?
Yes.
And how they're on the street, they're father and son.
And they're just staring at each other.
And they just kind of stare at each other, right?
Yeah.
So, Jay mentioned that, and I've noticed this before in Japanese culture and Japanese movies and comics, things of that nature. Well, she mentioned that there's a word for this. And the word for this, apparently, is harage. Harage, I believe, is how it's pronounced in Japan, in the Japanese language. Something close to that.
Okay.
Harage. I think that's correct. Anyway, so basically, yeah, she mentions that, you know, silence is often used in Japanese anime and film to convey feelings without words. So I did, she encouraged me to look it up, and I did look it up. And this is a little bit of information from Wikipedia, Nicole, so take this with a grain of salt. But basically, it's the concept, a Japanese concept of interpersonal communication. And literally translated, the term means stomach art. And it refers to an exchange of thoughts and feelings that is implied in conversation rather than explicitly stated. It's a form of rhetoric intended to express real intention and true meaning through implication. For instance, in negotiation, it says here, harage is characterized by euphemisms, vague and indirect statements, prolonged silences, and careful avoidance of any comment that might cause offense. And of course, that's a huge thing in Japan. Thoughtful silence, because there's this very culturally defined element that they use that they never want to offend. They don't want to offend anyone. They're always very concerned about that. So basically, that's kind of this whole concept depicted on screen in a way. And also Jay mentions that perhaps because both of these characters have sort of these mental abilities, psychic abilities or powers, perhaps, that
like
maybe
an extrasensory perception almost. Yeah.
So that maybe they're actually communicating in a way that we don't really understand just by meeting each other like this on the street.
Very interesting.
In the American version, though, I don't know how well it translates because the son, he certainly seems to have some sort of extrasensory abilities, as you said, some sort of mental powers. But the father, Noah, in the American version, and this scene is carried over to the American version, he doesn't really seem to have any powers or anything, right? Not
like
that I
it's
recall.
Never like even hinted at, is
so,
it?
So maybe the American creators sort of misunderstood this sequence, or they just took it to mean something else.
Because they couldn't portray it like they wanted to, because we don't have anything like that.
Yeah, it's just not quite the same culturally.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, it ends up being kind of this awkward moment of silence in both movies. Maybe in the Japanese version, though, it has more meaning than in the United States version. Maybe in the U.S. version, it is just kind of awkward silence. Like,
yeah.
I know this is my dad, but like he's never around. I don't really want to talk to him. Maybe it's that kind of thing, or it's uncomfortable. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so thank you, Jay, for pointing that out. That's very interesting. And yes, I did not know the name for that, sort of cultural reference, but yes, it's interesting to know.
That is interesting. I love fun facts.
Fun facts, Nicole. Okay, so also, Nicole, from that episode, a little bit more feedback. Matt from Kansas Do you know Matt from Kansas, Nicole?
I do.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to, I always want to make sure that we know who Matt from Kansas is. So Matt from Kansas, loyal listener, and of course, we know him. He's our friend as well. So Matt from Kansas, he also had some, basically a question about the Ring movies.
Okay.
So let me, I'm going to give this one to you. So pay attention.
Okay.
I'm going to see what you say to this, okay? You're going to answer Matt from Kansas. You're going to answer okay. the question here, all right? All right, so Matt asks, Matt from Kansas asks, if you're an innocent person killed by an angry, vengeful ghost, what stops you from also becoming an angry, vengeful ghost due to your wrongful, unjust death? If you did become a ghost, would you then haunt the ghost who killed you? So, take the first one, the first question first. So, if you were an innocent person killed by this angry, vengeful ghost or spirit, what have you, do you then become an angry, vengeful ghost? What stops you from becoming that? Do you also become an angry, vengeful ghost?
I think you can, sure.
You could possibly, but sure, not necessarily. Why not?
I think what's stopping you?
What's stopping you?
I mean, I guess if you want to, you can.
Okay.
Why not?
Why not, Nicole?
Why not? And, I don't yeah. think it's like an automatic.
Not necessarily. I think maybe it depends on the person.
I think you have to have the will
mm-hmm.
or a reason.
Okay.
Or, you know, maybe it's in your spirit.
Yeah.
Even.
Maybe that, it's just something to do with your personality.
Yeah, yeah.
Before
absolutely.
Death. Maybe you're an angry, vengeful person secretly in real life, even though you're innocent.
Maybe,
that
yeah.
Could be. So, if you become a ghost, then do you somehow haunt the ghost that killed you? Or you team up with it?
I don't know. Do you become friends?
You buddy up with them?
Yeah, like you're a tag team match now?
Yeah, I don't know, Nicole. Your tag team partner, the other vengeful ghost.
I don't know. Maybe there's... Maybe if you're a vengeful spirit, you're only hooked to the living. Like, you're only attracted to the living, so you could care less about another ghost.
Okay, yeah, maybe so. Yeah, and I suggested maybe it just, like, becomes, like, a whole separate new, like, kind of curse situation.
Maybe.
Like a whole separate haunting incident. Yeah, who
yeah,
knows?
Like, they're not even on the same plane.
Yeah, maybe not.
I don't know.
Maybe they only become in tune with certain individuals that those individual ghosts knew or something. Yeah. I don't know.
That depends on if in this... We're talking about, can ghosts interact with each other? Or
yeah.
do ghosts or seem oblivious to other ghosts? I don't know that answer.
I don't know. Matt from Kansas, we don't know. This is all speculation.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Well, all right. We talked about
we
it.
We did try, Matt. Yes,
we discussed it.
Yeah.
We don't have a solid answer. Also, number one fan, Adam, he... About this episode, he made a Facebook post and shared the episode, I believe. So thank you, Adam. We appreciate that. But also, I believe he basically said, I don't have the Facebook post in front of me, but he basically said that The Ring, the U.S. version, the original one, I think was a very sort of early horror film for Adam. So I think it was kind of very influential for him early on in progressing and learning more about okay. horror. But... I think he was on the side of the U.S. version. I think
okay.
it's one of I think he says it's one of the times where the remake actually surpasses the original
well,
in his
opinion.
Well,
and it was so influential in forming his tastes, so it's probably just, you know how it is.
I do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you know. That's
Shit,
what
Adam,
you like.
I do that too.
That's what you love, so,
yeah.
I mean...
And, well, we even said in the episode that it's pretty close. Like, I really like the American version, mm-hmm. too. It does have a lot of differences. But, you know, I think I tend to always lean toward the original version. Because without the original, you can't even have the remake. So I think in my mind, that's where I tend to lean most of the time. But in some cases, the remake is very, very strong. Like, mm-hmm. in this case, it does some different things with the story that we really enjoyed. We talked about that in the episode. So if you didn't hear the episode, go back and listen to the episode.
That's right.
And then you'll hear what we had to say about it, Nicole.
Yeah.
Now we'll talk about feedback from our top 10 horror films of the 1970s. We'll talk about that another time. But I just did want to touch on a couple of little details. A couple of little gotta clean it up.
Oh, yeah.
This place is gonna be rotten. We gotta clean it up, brother.
A little bit of gotta clean it up here. But not too serious. Basically, the movie The Sentinel from 1977. There's always something that I say, a quote that I say from that movie, and we didn't even talk about it in the movie, Nicole.
Oh, my goodness.
Or in the episode when we talked about
the movie. I can't believe you forgot
that. Yeah, I totally forgot about it. So I always say this line, and the line is, black and white cat, black and white cake. And there's this party that happens for a cat,
yep.
A birthday party for a cat. The cat's name is Jezebel in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a black and white cat wearing a little party hat. And all of the ghostly figures who no one else can see other than the main character in the movie, they're all there. They're all present
they're
at
all
this
there.
Party.
Right, right.
And she goes as well. Her name's Allison, the character's name in the movie. She goes to this party with Burgess Meredith and Sylvia Miles and these other people who are the
right.
guests at the party. So, yeah. So she's at the party, and one of these ghosts that are there, or spirits, demons, whatever they are, that was a murderer in
yeah.
former life. Well, she's kind of an elderly woman, and she kind of like scoffs and says, black and white cat, black and white cake. Because there's a black and white cake for Jezebel the cat who's black and white.
That's right.
Black and white cat, black and white cake.
And you always say that because we have a black and white cat.
Yeah, we got a black and white cat right over there. His name's Appa.
That's right.
So, yes, it's it's just a line that's it's very important for that
it's
a very important piece
of the Sentinel.
It's
very important to you
yes.
because it's you say it all the time.
Probably my favorite part of the movie The Sentinel, I guess, is black and white
yeah.
cat, black and white cake. I didn't even talk about it, Nicole. Also, Nicole, we talked about the movie from Werner Herzog, Klaus Kinski starring in Werner Herzog's Nosferatu from 1979.
Yes.
We talked about that one, Nicole. And there is, I've mentioned this, I think, in the past, maybe, on the show at some point, although I can't remember when it would have been, but there is a documentary that Werner Herzog made about his relationship with Klaus Kinski, who, of course, like we said when we were talking about Nosferatu,
yeah.
these guys, they were constantly butting heads. They had a lot of problems, but they kept working together because Klaus Kinski is a little bit of a nut. So, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes in filmmaking. But there's a documentary called Not My Best Friend, Nicole, but My Best Fiend.
My Best Fiend.
And it is fascinating. If you want to learn more about their relationship and sort of the struggles
okay.
they had working together, I love it. I've watched it a number of times. And if I talk about it right now just a little bit, I'm going to want to watch it again.
Yeah, yeah, you're starting to wax poetic. I
yes,
can
I'm,
see the
I'm
passion all, in your face and you're
I'm getting,
getting
all wound up. I got to
dial
it back
calm
a
little it down
bit here.
A little.
Yeah, I'm going to relax for a second. But My Best Fiend is very good, Nicole.
Okay.
It's a very good documentary. If you appreciate filmmaking, it's definitely something that you should seek out and watch at some point. My Best Fiend about Klaus Kinski. Directed by Werner Herzog. All right, Nicole. We better get into this episode.
Today's episode.
Well, talk about some of these movies.
We haven't even started yet.
We haven't even started, Nicole. Oh, my gosh. So this departure episode, this is one of those episodes that's, it's not horror.
But it's action, it's fantasy. It's
yeah, this is action, fantasy, sci-fi is
exactly.
kind of what we got here.
You know,
this is kind of a...
It's got like a trifecta.
A trifecta. We're going to talk about three movies. And these movies, Nicole, they're kind of what generally referred to as like sword and sandal movies.
Yeah.
Because they have swords and they also wear sandals or boots.
Or
some
breech
sort of,
cloth.
Some sort of footwear that is not like a sneaker or something like that.
Or Oxford.
Oxford. They're not wearing like high heels or
yeah.
anything. No. Although maybe somebody's wearing like a high heel boot. I don't remember.
Ho heels.
Ho heels. No ho heels. Although maybe. But I don't remember. So a little bit of sword and sandal action here. Okay. Fantasy, action, science fiction, like we said. So, Nicole, we're going to talk about three movies, okay?
Yep.
Three movies here. So we're not even going to reveal what they are in the intro. We're just going to go right into them. We're going to talk about them in chronological order as far as the release date in the United States, Nicole.
Okay.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about the first one in just a moment. So we said we're going to try to keep this, like, under 6 hours. So we're going to try to go through these kind of quickly and not get too crazy and carried away, okay? All right, Nicole, the first one, the first movie we're going to talk about, the first sword and sandal epic that we've got for the listeners today, Nicole, is from 1981, June 12th, 1981. What is the movie called, Nicole?
Clash of the Titans.
And this is not the remake. There's a Clash of the Titans remake from, like, the 3D era, the more recent 3D era, where everything was like, oh, yeah, man, we gotta go see that on IMAX 3D, yeah! That was from 2010. This is not that one. I never saw that one, Nicole. It got terrible reviews. There's also a sequel to that one called Wrath of the Titans, which I totally forgot existed until I saw it on the shelf of a certain used bookstore movie chain. Yeah, I saw it on the shelf. And I was like, I didn't even remember that movie existed. Well, Clash of the Titans from 1981. Nicole, this movie is rated PG. It runs 1 hour and 58 minutes.
I mean, there is some nudity in
you
this.
You see nipples.
You do see.
Male nipples and female nipples, yeah. Nicole.
You do.
Breasts, as you like to say. The bosom. Anyway, Nicole, so this is classified on IMDb, Nicole. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Okay. As an action, adventure, family, fantasy. So it's listed as a family movie, but there's nudity in this movie, Nicole.
You know, but it's important for kids to know Greek mythology.
And it's important for those same kids to know that in Greek mythology,
people
there are
naked.
Boobs. You're going to see boobs.
That's right.
All right, well, let me read the IMDb description real quick here, Nicole. Perseus must battle Medusa and the Kraken to save the princess Andromeda.
Wow.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all you get.
You know, it basically, it's the adventures of Perseus.
The adventures of Perseus in the rollicking times of Greek mythology, Nicole.
So gods, goddesses, heroes, monsters.
All that kind of nonsense,
I mean,
Nicole.
It's awesome.
So
stop motion.
Stop motion special effects. That's right. This is directed by Desmond Davis. It is written by Beverly Cross. And Beverly Cross, he wrote a few other movies that are kind of similar style-wise to this. Jason and the Argonauts in 1963 and Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger in 1977. Well, the thing that those movies that Beverly Cross wrote have in common with Clash of the Titans here is that those two movies are also movies in which special effects icon legend Ray Harryhausen, he also did special effects on those movies.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about Ray Harryhausen for a moment before we get into other things, because, honestly, he's the best part of this movie. So, in 1981 here, the Ray Harryhausen style, it's beginning to get a little dated. And this is his last special effects movie. This is the last time he did special effects on a movie. So, his stop motion animation technique was called Dynamation.
Dynamation, okay.
That's what he called it.
Okay.
So his mentor was Willis H. O'Brien, Nicole. Do you know what Willis H. O'Brien is famous for?
I don't.
Well, let me tell you, Nicole. Willis H. O'Brien is famous for creating these special effects in 1933 for the original King Kong Nickel.
Okay.
Which were also, like, stop-motion models.
Mm-hmm.
So, he was kind of the originator of it, and then Ray Harryhausen mentored under him and kind of started doing his own stuff, too. So they worked together on kind of a Kong sequel, Mighty Joe Young from 1949, Nicole.
Uh-huh.
But then Ray Harryhausen went on to become a legend. Special effects people and filmmakers have been inspired by Ray Harryhausen and his creations for years, Nicole. He did The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms in 1953. It Came from Beneath the Sea in 1955. Earth versus the Flying Saucers, Nicole, in 1956. 20 Million Miles to Earth in 1957. The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad in 1958. Jason and the Argonauts, like we said, in 1963. 1 Million Years B.C., for Hammer Films in 1966, The Golden Voyage of Sinbad in 1973, and Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger in 1977, which we mentioned earlier, among other things as well. He did other things too. But so many of those movies, just like iconic stop motion, like Jason and the Argonauts in particular, is one that I used to watch when I was a kid and just like absolutely blown away by what I was seeing when I saw it like in the 80s. And at that point, Clash of the Titans was already out. I'd probably already seen that, too. But the Skeleton Warriors from Jason and the Argonauts and just the way they move, like, they look so awesome, Nicole.
Well, I have to say that, you know, I took notes on all the stop motion.
Yeah?
And I really liked how many characters of stop motion there were.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I really did like those characters.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, like, the technique was getting a little dated at this point, but it's still really cool to see, I think. And this is a good kind of, like, you know, a swan song, I guess, for Ray Harryhausen doing special effects here. Because you see some pretty cool stuff. And do you want to talk about some of those now?
I did count eight.
You counted eight?
I counted eight stop-motion characters.
Okay. Well, do you want to list them? Do you want to talk about them right now?
Well, it will come out of reference, but Calibus. Pegasus.
The Pegasus.
Bubo.
Bubo, the robotic owl.
The Scorpions.
Oh, the Scorpions, the giant scorpions, yeah.
Yeah.
Volturo?
Volturo.
Oh, was that the vulture?
That must have been the
giant vulture, yeah. Okay.
The Kraken.
Oh, of course, the Kraken.
Charon and Doskilios.
Yeah. And then there's one you forgot.
What?
The main one, Nicole, the one that is so iconic in this movie, other than the Kraken, you forgot Medusa.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So Medusa, too, is in there. So yeah, there's so many great stop-motion animation characters, you're right.
So yeah, there's like more. Nine.
Yeah, there's like nine at least, Nicole. Well, anyway, it's fine. You know, you did a good job listing off those other ones. Another thing that Clash of the Titans has, Nicole, is kind of kind of an all-star cast in a way. Some people that were certainly very well-known at the time, and then some people who would become a little bit more well-known. You've got Laurence Olivier, Nicole, of course, as
who? Zeus.
Yes, as Zeus, yes. And then you have other members of the gods here. You have Claire Bloom, who, of course, was in 1963's The Haunting, starring as Hera. You have Maggie Smith, who I feel like went on to more notoriety after this movie, honestly.
Yeah.
As Thetis. You have Ursula Andress as Aphrodite. Ursula Andress was in, I believe, Dr. No, the James Bond movie. So she was kind of like the original Bond girl, kind of.
Yeah.
And apparently, and I didn't realize this watching the movie, but she has one line of dialogue in the movie.
Yeah, she did not have very much at all.
One line of dialogue. You have Jack Gwillem as Poseidon. And my favorite thing about Poseidon is he doesn't really get involved that much, but like, he's in these underwater scenes,
scenes. He releases the Kraken.
Yeah, where he releases the Kraken, and he's just like, you see his face, and he's just kind of like underwater, and I just always remember that. It's weird. And then you have Susan Fleetwood as Athena, Nicole. Okay?
Do you know who Hephaestus is?
I don't remember. I guess I didn't write that one down. I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, you're upset now.
You know, he's the blacksmith.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Is he the one that makes Bubo the mechanical owl?
Yeah, he makes Bubo.
Okay, so, well, yeah. At one point during the movie, Zeus, and basically Perseus, who's played by Harry Hamlin, who later goes on to star in L.A. Law and was like a sexy guy, you know, in the 80s
he's
there.
He's a good-looking guy.
He's a good-looking guy, yeah. So, Harry Hamlin as Perseus, he's going on this adventure, basically, like we said, to... He wants to marry the Princess Andromeda, but
yeah.
He has to, like... he's got to, like, basically...
He basically wants to avenge his mother and take her, like, revenge on her father's kingdom.
Yes. Something like that, I guess. Yeah, because his, like, his...
grandfather was a king.
Yeah. And, like, and basically what I was trying to say is his region of the world where he was from was destroyed. Like, it was destroyed.
Yeah.
So basically, like, he's like the heir to that kingdom, but it had been destroyed by the gods.
Right.
So now he wants to marry the Princess Andromeda, but basically
she has a curse on her.
Kind of complete these tasks.
Yeah.
Then to basically release her is what we're trying to say here.
Exactly.
So at one point, Perseus is in need, of course, he needs help. And, you know, Zeus is always trying to kind of help him out because Zeus, we find out...
Is Perseus's father.
Is, yeah. And through, you know, weird Zeus magical sexual means, which, man, that Zeus, apparently, he kind of got around a little bit.
Zeus always got around, right?
Yeah. So, Perseus is always getting help from Zeus, and basically he says to Athena... Zeus says, why don't you give Perseus your owl, Bubo? And she's like,
never.
and he's like, oh, but, you know, it's what I wish, so you have to do it. And he's just such asshole.
It really is kind of a cocky statement. But, you know, in the end, Athena outsmarts him.
She does. Because she does have the blacksmith.
Hephaestus.
Yes. Create Bubo, the mechanical owl.
Right.
And this mechanical robot owl, Nicole, he talks with all these beeps and everything.
Of
course, this is 1981, and this Bubo the owl...
is pretty fantastic.
But basically, what I'm saying is it is like a combination of C-3PO and R2-D2.
I know. You know, I wish we had a Bubo.
You want Bubo the Owl?
I love Bubo.
Well, we don't have Bubo the Owl. All we have is R2-D2. That's all.
Well.
That's all we have.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, I guess I can listen to that.
But yeah, Bubo does have, like, similar, like, beeps and clicks and things like that. That's how Bubo communicates. But, yes, it's like this stop-motion mechanical owl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty cool. Pretty cool to see, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, anyway, Nicole, we were talking earlier about the nudity, because there is a little bit of nudity in this movie, but it's still listed as a family film. And like you said, boobs and everything like that. Is this like a classification of, is this like tasteful nudity? Is that what we're talking about here?
I think it's because it's a classic. This is a classic story.
Because it's a classic story,
maybe
they can get away with it?
Yeah.
All right, I guess so. I don't know. It just seems weird to me, Nicole. So the Kraken, Nicole, they don't waste a lot of time introducing the Kraken because, yes, it's released at like the 9-minute mark. So the Kraken you get to see pretty early on.
Yeah.
And the Kraken, like you were talking about when you watched it, it just looks kind of like a big sea monster, you said.
Right, it does look like a sea monster.
The Kraken to you is what?
Is more of the giant octopus.
It's like a giant squid kind of creature.
But I think in just different fandoms have different Krakens.
Of course, yeah. But basically, yeah, I don't know, it seemed like you were a little bit like, well, that's not the Kraken, you know, that kind of thing.
That doesn't look like a Kraken to me.
Yeah, that just looks like some sort of green sea monster with like four arms, I guess. I had four arms, yeah. Perseus is basically gifted by the gods some accessories. He gets some equipment. He gets a sword. He gets a shield and he gets a helmet. Right?
Right.
So, these are special gifts from the gods that he can use on his quest, Nicole. And he meets up with Burgess Meredith. And Burgess Meredith's character's name is Amon. And I feel like, you know, I've seen a lot of Burgess Meredith lately. Like,
yeah.
He was in The Sentinel. We watched that. And then I also watched this anthology called Torture Garden from the late 60s. And he's like in the wraparound story for that. So I have a lot of Burgess Meredith around lately. Anyway, but yeah, so he basically meets up with him, and Burgess Meredith kind of becomes like his like early sort of guide to kind of get him started on this quest. But yeah, he gets this sword and the shield. What does the helmet do, Nicole?
The helmet turns him invisible.
Yeah, and he promptly proceeds to put it to use to sneak into the bedroom of Princess Andromeda while she's sleeping.
That's right.
And kind of studies her because, oh my God, her beauty, Nicole, cannot be surpassed. Yeah. Yes, she's the most beautiful thing ever of all time. Well, and she's played by Judy Boker, something like that.
So he notices that her spirit kind of leaves her body at night.
And where does it go, Nicole?
So it gets in a cage carried by this giant vulture.
The giant vulture that you mentioned earlier.
The giant vulture, right. Yeah. And this vulture carries her to a swamp-like place.
Mm-hmm.
And
who's at the swamp, Nicole?
Calibos is there.
Yeah. And Calibos was originally going to be marrying Andromeda, but because of something he did, I can't remember exactly what happened.
He is Theseus's son.
Yes.
And somehow Zeus cursed him, basically.
And deformed him. Yeah, so he's got kind of like these horns and big kind of like clawed hands and a tail. He looks very sort of demonic, I guess. Is how
like a devil.
Him. Yeah, some sort of a devil character. Yeah.
So basically he was cursed to be, they described it as a hideous visage, you know, basically.
Yes. Oh, he's hideous. And Zeus has these, like, models, like little figurines of everybody. And that's one of the scenes that I always remember is when first Calibos is normal, but then it's kind of shown, like, off screen, like the shadow is what actually becomes deformed and changes. So this is another, like, stop motion thing that, yeah, he sets it down and basically then he says he's going to deform Calibos. And in doing so, like, the shadow of the figurine changes, and then it's a new figurine the next time you see it, you know? But I like those little figurines that he has. Zeus playing with his toys. He can,
that's,
you know,
right. His little action figures.
He can affect reality by playing with these toys that he has. But Calibos, Nicole, apparently, Calibos is stop motion, but then in the close-up scenes, he's played by the actor Neil McCarthy. So, Calibos is actually not from Greek mythology, Nicole. Did you know that?
I did.
I didn't know that. So apparently, Calibos is based on the character Caliban from Shakespeare's The Tempest, which I didn't realize. I didn't realize that Calibos was not actually from Greek mythology. Well,
I did read a lot of Greek mythology.
You did.
I do like the stories.
You're an expert on Greek mythology.
I'm not an expert on Shakespeare, though.
Okay, well, anyway. So, yeah, Perseus. And, yeah, Andromeda, it confused me. Because her spirit gets into this cage and the vulture takes it away. And then it happens again. And I was like, what's happening? But apparently, like, yeah.
It was Calibos, multiple nights.
Yeah, just came back the next night, sent the vulture again with the cage. But I don't know why she's getting in that cage twice, Nicole. I guess her spirit just can't help itself, but it seems odd to me. Why would you get back in the cage and go to the swamp again? Huh?
I mean, they were friends once. Maybe she's like, well, I guess I'll go see what he wants.
I guess. I don't know. But yeah, so basically, he has Perseus is who we're talking about, has 30 days, a 30-day deadline to stop this situation from happening. Otherwise, his marriage is going to be ruined. His marriage to Andromeda is going to be ruined. He basically has to find a way to defeat the Kraken because the Kraken is going to come in 30 days and I guess, eat Andromeda and anything else it wants to.
And so basically it's about, you know, his trials during this 30 days. Well,
he has to go see those witches.
Yeah, he goes see some
the
witches.
The Stygian witches.
Yeah.
So he goes to see the witches, and the witches are blind, and they have that little eye that they hold, which is like a little crystal ball kind of thing. But yeah, that's a fun scene. And then they basically inform him that, you know, there might be a way to defeat the Kraken, but to do it, you're going to have to defeat Medusa first.
Which is also a Titan, they say. Yeah.
So basically, those are the Titans, yes, that we're talking about, is the Kraken, and Medusa is a Titan as well. So, a Titan to defeat a Titan, Nicole.
Right. So, I would say anybody who likes mythology would like this movie. It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Nicole, it's a fun movie.
And like we said, the stop motion is fun.
It's fun.
It does look dated. It's nothing like CGI. You know, it's not clean.
Yeah, it's definitely.
But it's interesting.
It's definitely different. It's from a different era.
Right.
But to me, always like the main standout scene in the movie is the Medusa scene. I'll never forget that. When I saw that as a kid, it was just...
I remember...
It's very creepy.
It is creepy. And her lair, I always loved as a kid seeing her lair.
Yeah.
And those snakes writhing on her head.
Mm-hmm. There are little people in there that have been turned to stone. And she's got that rattle on her tail. Yep,
she's got a rattlesnake tail.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But, yeah, the Medusa battle is fantastic. That's, yeah, the one thing that, yeah, if I think of Clash of the Titans, the first image that pops into my mind is Medusa in the movie.
Yeah.
Which is not good because I'll be turned to stone.
I always think of Bubo.
Bubo.
And I think of Medusa. You're right. I do Bubo think of Medusa.
And Medusa. The giant Kraken. Totally an afterthought. What about Pegasus, Nicole? We didn't really talk about Pegasus
very
much.
So, I do love Pegasus, too, because my brother had a Pegasus action figure.
Yeah.
And I used to play with it a lot.
You used to play with the Pegasus action figure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Nicole, yeah, I was going to mention that, yes, because of the success of the Star Wars toy line by Kenner back in the day, for this movie, Mattel released sort of like the same size action figures for Clash of the Titans. And I remember seeing them. I never had any of them, but I remember seeing them. And yeah, definitely Pegasus.
Pegasus is probably still in my parents' basement.
It probably is.
I mean, he did have detachable wings.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's there.
He's there somewhere.
He's got to be there.
If the wings had not been detachable, the Pegasus figure would have flown away by now.
That's right.
But because the wings are detachable, it's probably still there.
Nicole probably put him in a box with wings detached.
Yeah, and I remember there's also like a giant like Kraken figure. I remember that as well. But yeah, I never had any of the figures, but I remember seeing them back in like Sears Christmas catalogs back in the day. I'm sure I was probably drooling over them.
Did you circle them?
Oh, I probably did. I was probably like, oh my God, I want those Titans figures.
I gotta have them.
Oh my God. The budget for Clash of the Titans, Nicole, it ranged, the research I saw ranges from $9 to $15 million and ended up making like $41 million. So it did pretty well back in 1981. Yeah. Like it was no Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back or anything like that.
But it was a pretty good ROI.
Did pretty well. Yes, Nicole. Well, Clash of the Titans. So we didn't do any mass or murdering, Nicole, when we were doing those 70s movies, because all the main ones that we covered are obvious masses. Even the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which you despise, is still an amass, Nicole. So we didn't do any amass or murdering for those, but I think we should get back to our amass or murder staple with this episode. So what do you think, Nicole, Clash of the Titans 1981, not that silly remake? What do you want to do with Clash of the Titans? You want to amass it?
We're amassing it because it's awesome.
What if I don't want to amass it?
That's tough.
That's tough. Anyway. No, it's fun. I will say that the runtime, it's a little lengthy. At some points, it drags a little bit. Gets a little slow.
Yeah.
But still.
I'm sorry, Poseidon. But those underwater scenes are a complete waste of time.
They are a total waste of time, yeah. I think the only reason they did it is just so they could show Poseidon underwater.
Yeah, maybe so.
But otherwise, what's the point? Yeah. I know what you're saying.
We could have shaved off several minutes there.
Could have just cut that out completely.
And it's not in there once, but it's in there twice.
Yeah, it's in there at least twice, exactly. But yeah, it's a fun movie. No question about it. A fun family film with nudity. So if you want to introduce nudity to your children, Clash of the Titans is what Nicole
maybe
recommends.
Maybe you shouldn't, you know, approach nudity is wrong, Craig.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Nudity is not wrong, Nicole. It's not a sin to be naked.
It's not.
No.
Provide him with suitable weapons. Weapons of divine temper. A helmet, a shield, a sword.
Find and fulfill your destiny.
The myth. The magic. The mystery. The majesty.
Destroy Argos!
Let loose the last of the Titans.
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Clash of the Titans. The good, the evil, the danger, the daring.
How may a mortal man face and defeat the Kraken?
Clash of the Titans. The combat, the courage, the splendor, the spectacle. Clash of the Titans. Starring Harry Hamlin as Perseus, Judy Balker as Andromeda, Burgess Meredith, Maggie Smith, Ursula Andress, Claire Bloom, Sean Phillips, Flora Robeson, and Laurence Olivier as Zeus. Before history, beyond imagination. Clash of the Titans.
More swords, more sandals, Nicole. That's what we've got here in the next movie. This one, Nicole, is from 1982. Released August 20th of 1982, Nicole. Okay. And what is this movie?
The Beastmaster.
Yes, it is. And Nicole, this one is rated PG as well. Huh. PG runs 1 hour and 58 minutes. Is that the exact same runtime as Clash of the Titans? It is! What the hell?
Maybe you wrote it down wrong.
No, I did not. This movie, Nicole, is an action, adventure, fantasy movie.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Action, adventure, fantasy. All right, Nicole.
Okay.
Let's read the IMDb description.
Sure thing.
A sword and sorcery fantasy about a young man's search for revenge. Armed with supernatural powers, the handsome hero and his animal allies wage war against marauding forces. I started to lose it when I got to the animal allies. I got tickled by
that.
Well,
you can't forget Kodo and Podo.
What about Toto the dog that dies? That's sad. There is a dog that dies in the movie, Nicole.
Yeah, Toto.
Yes. Toto.
Toto.
Not Toto from The Wizard of Oz, but Toto from The Beastmaster.
You're right.
Well, anyway, Nicole, I feel like that description is pretty okay.
Pretty right, vague.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't want to tell you a whole lot, but the basics are there. So, The Beastmaster, Nicole, is directed by, and written actually by, Don Coscarelli, written with Paul Pepperman. Don Coscarelli, Nicole, is also known for creating the Phantasm series.
That's right.
Yeah. And also he did the movie Bubba Hotep.
Yes.
If fans of horror and goofy horror are familiar with that one.
Bruce Campbell.
Campbell is in that one. And Ossie Davis. Yeah. So apparently this idea is kind of loosely, but very loosely based on is it Andre Norton or is it Andre Norton?
I think it's Andre.
maybe Andre, but based on, I guess, her novel, The Beastmaster. But apparently she asked to have her name removed because it isn't close enough.
Okay.
To
her vision.
Yes, okay. Like the book. So there's a title match, but I guess the story is only very, very vaguely.
Okay.
Like maybe the book, maybe there's also like animal like situation, like where they, you know, okay, someone could communicate with animals. I haven't read it, but anyway. Yeah, so yes, that's what I'm trying to say. So this movie, Nicole, had a $9 million budget. Ended up making $14.1 million at the box office, so not a ton of money.
Yeah.
It was, though, a big hit on cable television.
It's definitely a cult classic.
And VHS, yeah. And yeah, so cable TV, VHS rentals.
Yeah.
This was a big hit as far as that goes. And yeah, like you said, definitely a cult classic. Yeah. Recently in, last Black Friday, Vinegar Syndrome, the company Vinegar Syndrome, released a very nice collector's edition, like 4K Blu-ray of this. So if you're interested in that, it was still available. I just checked recently, and it's still available out there if you want to grab this fancy copy of The Beastmaster that comes in a spectacular box, Nicole, with fantastic
artwork.
It
is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. So anyway, what we have here in The Beastmaster is we have Mark Singer as the character Dar Nickel.
That's right.
Mark Singer is the brother of Lori Singer, who went on to be in Footloose with Kevin Bacon, and also in Warlock with Julian Sands in the late 80s, early 90s. So Mark Singer, to me, when I was watching this, it kind of struck me, and here's like a weird like wrestling reference, Nicole. He could definitely be a member of the Von Erich family. Do you know who they are, Nicole?
I don't know.
You have absolutely
no
idea.
I have no idea.
But yes, in the Dallas area in the early 80s, there's this group of wrestling, young, sexy wrestling boys named the Von Erichs. And he could definitely like fit in with those guys. Like he could have been like the missing Von Erich brother in World Class Championship Wrestling, Nicole.
Okay.
Anyway, so Mark Singer is Dar.
Is Dar.
And Dar, as a young lad, he is basically what? What happens to him, Nicole?
Well, before he's even born, I think you have to go back before Dar's born.
Before he's even born?
Yeah, so I think the movie even starts with the king and queen and this evil sorcerer. Basically.
The evil sorcerer Mayax?
Yes, that's right. And who is that guy played by?
Mayax is played by Rip Torn, who's okay, a character actor who's been in a ton of things. Did you know, Nicole, before you go any further, that Don Coscarelli originally intended Klaus Kinski to be Mayax, but they couldn't come to terms on like financials. Okay. They couldn't come to a deal. So the producers were like,
Rip
we're just going to get Rip Torn instead.
Rip Torn's really good.
He does a pretty good job here, yes.
Like, just he just looks psycho from
he's
the beginning.
Crazy.
And he's got these two little pigtails, braided pigtails.
Yeah.
And they have, like, the ends are tied off with, like, tiny little skulls.
Little skulls, yeah.
And I like,
it's a good look, Nicole.
It's so funny. It's, like, comical look, though, for me. So,
but he does, you're right, he starts off, like, crazy, but as the movie keeps going, like, he gets even more nuts
right,
as the movie goes
right.
on.
So, basically, I would describe it as he's a cult leader,
mm-hmm.
and these witches work for him, basically. So, this...
Yeah, and I forgot about this, because the witches, like, have, like, what would traditionally be considered, like, sexy bodies, right?
Right.
But then their faces are disfigured.
Right. I mean, they have the, like, very thin, athletic-y bodies,
mm-hmm.
you know? But, yeah, their faces are definitely, like, haggish.
Yes.
For the witch, the witch look.
Uh-huh.
So, this witch steals the unborn baby of the queen. And somehow transfers the unborn baby into a cow.
Yes.
And then she basically does a cesarean on the cow. And, you know, I always felt so sad for that cow.
That poor cow.
That poor cow. But then she's going to sacrifice Dar. So, like, I guess to make this prophecy true, that she has to sacrifice the unborn.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, a man comes by, kills the witch, and saves Dar. Becomes his stepfather. Then Dar grows up in this nice little village.
This nice little village. Yeah. But, yes, as he's growing up, though, this bear, like a grizzly bear, comes out of the woods and, like, kills one of the other villagers. But Dar communicates with it somehow and drives it away.
That's
even
right.
As a young lad, Nicole That's drives right. it away. But I love when that bear comes out and, like, you know, whoa, here's this bear. And, yes, kills
it. So his stepfather says, you know, this must remain our secret.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about this.
You really shouldn't tell people you've got, like, witch powers.
Some sort of, yeah, like, power over animals or something. And, yeah, the village then, in very, like, Conan-like fashion, the village where he's from is destroyed. Like, everybody's killed. And it's pretty brutal. But like you said, there's not really much blood in this movie at all. It's not very gory, but there's a lot of, like, dead bodies and things, like, on posts and things like that around. So it's kind of grotesque, but I feel like maybe they kept the blood under wraps to try to keep it, like, at a PG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is scary enough that it adds an edge.
It does, like, yeah.
I remember as a young girl that I thought, hey, this is pretty creepy.
This is pretty rough here. And of course, Toto the dog, like we said, like, gets killed pretty early on. But Toto the dog is a hero.
He is a because
hero. He saves Dar.
He hides Dar.
Yes, he pulls Dar away, drags him away, and hides Dar. Yeah. So Dar then, yes, is going to be okay. Yeah.
So along the way, Dar does collect a menagerie of friends.
He does,
so,
yeah.
So, like,
he wakes up out of this, like, death slumber when Toto drags him away with, like, this weird eagle vision. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
He has this kind of, like, sight through an eagle.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think the eagle is ever named, right? I don't think the eagle ever has a name.
His eagle is never named.
Yeah. But he does have these, like, occasional, like, visions through eagle sight, what the eagle is seeing.
And the eagle follows along with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, your favorites, Nicole, are the ferrets.
Are Kodo and Podo.
And yes, Dar ends up falling into some quicksand. And like we've said before on this podcast, Nicole, in the early 80s,
quicksand was
a big deal. Like, you, as a kid, you thought at
you
some point...
You lived in terror.
You might die in quicksand.
Right.
Yes, it might
I thought,
happen.
Like, walking around on my parents' property, I was going to fall in quicksand.
You're going to fall in quicksand.
Because we did have sinkholes where I lived.
Yeah.
And sinkholes, if you don't know what those are openings to underground caves.
Yes.
You know, which led to usually a stream, underground stream. So... Yeah, I was always terrified that I was going to encounter quicksand.
And it was stuff like this, the Beastmaster, the Dukes of Hazzard. You saw quicksand on these movies or shows, and yes, as a kid, we were terrified.
Yeah, we were terrified.
Absolutely terrified.
Yes.
But yes, so thankfully, these ferrets, what are their names they're called?
Kodo and Podo.
They save Dar from the quicksand, but one of them then falls into the quicksand, one of the ferrets.
Yeah.
And for a little while, you think... The ferret's going to die in the quicksand.
Yeah.
And it's pretty upsetting.
It is pretty upsetting at first because you're like, he's not even going to save the ferret.
Yeah, but he does.
He does.
Dar saves the ferret. And then they're his friends.
Yeah.
They're his little thieves, he calls them, because they like stealing things.
So by now, he's got an eagle and two
ferrets. But then they come across
a tiger.
A large cat. Yes, a large cat. That is a tiger.
But it looks like they dyed the tiger.
And they did. Yes, they did dye the tiger. Because apparently, originally the filmmakers, Don Coscarelli, they wanted, like, a black leopard.
Okay.
In the role of Ruh, the tiger here.
Yeah.
Or the leopard, whatever it's supposed to be in the movie. The big cat. So, but apparently, they're kind of skittish. And they're kind of hard to deal with as far as, like, movies and things like that. But they were like, hey, how about some tigers? We got tigers. And They were like, well, yeah, Kyle Scarrelli was like, you know, I like the, you know, the look like of the Black Panthers or the Black Leopards.
Well, just going to dye the Tigers. Yeah,
so they just dyed the Tigers. You can definitely tell, especially on this Blu-ray version, that like sometimes you said, yeah, it looks like the dye's kind of fading a little bit there.
Like
yeah.
where they would drink, I think that it's really grown out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Or they probably excessively groom that area
probably
too,
so. Yeah. So yes, the dyed tiger is rescued, so then he becomes a part of, yes, like you said, the menagerie, his team of animals that he brings with him.
I think as a child, I was always very attracted to this because, you know,
because he looked like one of the Von Erichs?
Well, no, because who wouldn't want a team of animals
following
you around, saving you, and you know, doing things with you.
And speaking of, like, Mark Singer for a second, we talked about his age when we were watching it.
Yeah.
And you said, how old do you think he is right here? Because, like, he's really fit, you know? Like, he's ripped and muscular, but, like,
His face looks a little weathered, you know? Older,
yeah,
you know?
He's a little bit leathery, you know, but... And yeah, so I looked it up, and I think... What did I say? He was like 33, 34 at the time, something like that. So,
and
yeah,
I'm like,
you know.
Gosh, people in the 80s, they did just look a little older.
You know, they just lived hard, Nicole, in the 80s. They're living hard in the 80s, I think. So, yeah. But yeah, so he has these animals then. And of course, then, we get to the cringeworthy scene where he utilizes his animals to basically spy on and then assault a naked Tanya Roberts.
Some of these things are a bit sexist, I'm going to say.
Yeah. He basically forces himself on her, but...
Well, kiss.
Like,
kisses
her and then kind of, like, straddles her, but there's no... there apparently was, like, a sex scene that was cut. I don't know what portion of the movie it falls into, but... That was cut from the movie. So basically, he just, like, straddles her, and they have, like, this conversation, and, yeah, so, anyway.
Yeah.
But this is first meeting her, initially, like, forces a kiss on her, and things get a little weird. He has, like, the ferrets, Poto and Koto, I'm sorry, I got the dog mixed up in there, they steal her clothing and run away with the clothing, so, yeah, she's naked as well here, and the movie's PG. Is this a family film also, Nicole?
I don't think so. No.
It's not
well,
really
classified
as family.
It's not.
So,
okay,
no,
good.
No.
So, yeah, the Koto and Poto steal her clothes, and she's running around the forest with no top on.
Uh-huh. And she's with some other woman at the time, and I think you see both of them naked. So,
well, they're swimming.
You know. Yeah, they're swimming, of course. So, since they're swimming, Nicole, they're just skinny dipping. It's okay.
Well,
it's okay to see them
naked.
They
have pants on.
They've got pants on, yes. Pants, long
well,
pants.
No, like underwear.
Undies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, Nicole. But you've got what, and you said this too when you saw it. Like, oh, I remember this scene. Because you see this nighttime scene of this tree with these like glowing bag exact things on
it. I think this gave me some nightmares.
And it is a freaky scene,
Nicole.
This
is scary, I think, even as an adult to imagine this.
It is.
Because you see, it looks ethereal from a distance.
It does.
And you would be attracted to it.
Yeah, like, you know, man, like, I want to check this out.
Right, like moths to a flame.
Sure, exactly.
So you would... So this tree has these glowing sacks, and they're rather large sacks. And so
they'd be like human size or something.
Yeah. So Dar goes up to them.
And there's a guy in a cage there.
He sees a guy in a cage and he's like, oh. And then you see what's in the sacks and you're like, oh.
Yeah. And then he frees the guy in the cage. But then suddenly behind them appear these humanoid things.
That's right.
And they got kind of these like
they're bat people.
Yeah, they're kind of like this like bat people, these webbed like wing kind of things. Kind of like bat like wings.
It's like leathery wings.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no mouths.
Right.
And just their eyes and everything's like leathery over their mouth and nose.
Uh-huh.
So it obscures their features there.
Yes, they don't speak or anything.
Right. So that's why I say they're bat-like. Because they maybe
bats have mouths.
Well, right.
And they screech. Anyway,
Craig.
Anyway, I'm trying to ruin everything.
So, basically, they wrap their wings around this prisoner.
Yeah, the prisoner's trying to escape.
And that's how they ingest
people. So, like, yeah, they, like, wrap these webbed wing things around him. And then, like, you see the person in there struggling.
Because it's, like getting churned in around. The leathery. Like,
Yeah.
And then I'm like, come on, give me a hug.
Give me a hug. Yeah, they like to hug you, basically. They like to hug you. But then they open, like, the wing webbing thing. And what's left, Nicole?
Bones.
Bones just come flying out.
That's right.
Because they've eaten everything else or something.
That's right. Digested it off of the bones.
So what happens is, how does Dar get out of this situation? Should we spoil it? I guess we'll spoil it.
Okay.
Because basically what happens, they have, like, there's, like, this bird sculpture there. And the eagle,
They have a totem.
They have a totem, yes. Yeah. The eagle arrives, and either knowingly or inadvertently helps Dar by landing on this statue, this totem. And these bat people then are like, whoa. Dar's friends with this eagle.
Right.
Oh my gosh. We worship these things.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, and so, I just think that they took it as a good omen.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, oh, this guy, he's a friend of the god.
Yeah. And they end up giving him sort of this, like, token, this, like, necklace with some little, like, I don't know, symbols or things on it.
It's just another, like, an eagle bird symbol.
Yeah. That he ends up taking it with him and keeping. And that comes into play later toward the end of the movie, which we don't have to spoil.
Right.
But yeah, that scene, for me, is one of the main things that I always remember about the Beastmaster from my youth. Like, after that, I feel like I lost interest or something like that, because the movie kind of plods and drags for an hour and 58 minutes. But that scene is such a standout.
So there is something pretty amazing that I remember as a kid, too.
Sure, yeah.
And I was fascinated with this as a child, that Mayax and his witches could spy using this ring.
Which is also pretty cool.
Is pretty cool. So it's a ring, and it opens this little circle on top, and an eyeball sticking out.
Yes.
And it can see and hear things, you know. So basically, they're over a cauldron, looking through this cauldron into the ring. And, man, I always thought that was, you know, pretty cool. I don't want a ring with an eyeball on it, Craig.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, I always thought that was kind of a neat thing.
That was pretty cool at the time, Nicole.
That's pretty cool. That's right.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Anyway. At some point along the way, Dar ends up encountering a couple other characters that end up being heroes as well. You have John Amos playing Seth. And John Amos, when we were watching this movie, I said to you, I feel like he's one of these guys who never ages.
Right.
He always looks the same. Even today.
I think it's his cheekbones.
Maybe it's his cheekbones. But, like, yeah, like, this guy never seems to age. Yes, he was born in 1939. I looked it up. But, yeah, he never seems to age. Of course, he is, like you said, he's Cleo McDowell from Coming to America in 1988. He's in Lock Up with Sylvester Stallone in 1989. He's in Die Hard 2 in 1990. But he's been in a ton of things over the years. And, yeah, he never really seems to age. He always looks the same. Like, here in 1982 in The Beastmaster, like, he looked the same, like, 10 years later. Like, this guy never ages, Nicole. So he meets up with him. He meets up with Tal, played by Joshua Milrad, who's, like, kind of a youngster. He's probably, what, like, a teenager, Nicole?
Yeah.
So they end up teaming up, and basically, they're going to rescue Tanya Roberts, who plays the character Kiri. We mentioned her earlier. Tanya Roberts, of course, is known for being in Tourist Trap, the slasher movie with Chuck Connors in 1979. She was Queen of the Jungle in 1984. And she was also in the James Bond movie, A View to a Kill, in 1985. But she's also in that 70s show. She was the neighbor woman in that. I can't remember what the
Donna's mom
was. Donna's mom, is that was it Donna's mom? Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yes, anyway, Donna's mom in that 70s show. But And yeah, she actually died at the beginning of this year. And it was weird. Like, it was reported that she died. And then there was a report, wait a minute, she's not dead. And then it came back to another report, like, oh yeah, she did die. So, like, that was weird. Like, yeah, I don't know, miscommunication on somebody's part. So, yeah, unfortunately, I think she was like 70 years old. Died just early in 2021 here. So, yeah, very sad, Nicole. Sorry to bring things down with talk of someone passing away, Nicole. But, yeah, so basically, Seth, Dar, and Tal, they end up trying to rescue Kiri from Mayax, essentially. And Mayax, he's up to no good. He's, like, trying to sacrifice kids at the end of the movie, and there's all kinds of, like, horrible things that this Mayax guy is up to.
Mayax just needs trying to be
He does, gone. Actually. One kid gets thrown into the fire and is sacrificed, and then they're going to sacrifice another kid, but they end up rescuing that kid in time, so it doesn't happen. I don't remember. Someone drags the kid out of the fire. I can't remember. It's the eagle. Eagle does it. Yeah. So, yeah, there's like a pyramid structure that they have to infiltrate at one point. There are these, like, berserker guys in there wearing, like, leather running around everywhere. You got that eyeball ring causing problems.
You know, there's all sorts of mayhem in
all sorts of mayhem. That's right. At one point, there's a battle coming up, and Mark Singer, John Amos, and Joshua Milrad, all of the, like, the primary, like, rescue team, they all suddenly at the same time, like, strip off all their clothes, and, like, they're wearing these, like, skimpy little things. Like, Mark Singer's just wearing little undies, and John Amos, he's got some kind of, like, a leather thing on where his, like, his legs are all showing. He's not wearing much either. So these guys are looking pretty sexy here, Nicole, running around. And apparently, and I wrote in my notes, everyone gets naked, Nicole. Everyone just tears off their clothes and gets naked on this rescue team.
It's probably pretty hot.
It's probably hot there. I don't know what's going on. Actually, I think I read in the notes that, like, it was actually very cold during some of the filming. And, like, some of the people who were, like, scantily clad had to, like, huddle around fires and things like that. So anyway, it looks hot, though, Nicole. It looks like it would be hot.
It does look like it's pretty hot.
But, yeah. Everybody gets naked. They have this big battle. And, yeah, that's pretty much what happens in the movie, The Beastmaster, Nicole. But the one thing, Nicole, that we got to mention here is Dar speaking to the eagle. Do you remember this?
Yes.
How, like, Dar speaking to the eagle. And pretty much any time it happens, like, I'd get the giggles.
Yeah.
Because what does he do, Nicole? Can you do it? Can you imitate
it? I'm not going to do it.
I can't. I don't know if I can do it. But basically,
it's going to hurt my voice.
You know, he does things like, stuff like that. I don't know what he's doing. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
80s, early 80s, silly, goofy stuff.
You know, he doesn't talk like that to the ferret or the cat. Why is he talking like that to the eagle?
You should have talked to the other animals in their native tongue as well, Nicole.
Okay, yeah, that
you should have done that.
Been interesting.
Yes, that would have done a lot for the movie, I think. But yeah, so the Beastmaster, Nicole. I also remember this one from my youth. But when I watch it, like, only certain scenes actually, like, stick out for me.
Right.
Like, I've seen it a number of times, but for some reason, it doesn't stick with me. It's not super memorable.
I forget a lot of things.
Yeah, I do, and I can't watch it that often. It's kind of one that, it's okay, but yeah, the runtime, man, it gets really bogged down sometimes. It really drags out for a while. It's fun. Certain scenes are fun. Certain elements of it are fun, but man, it's a little too long. They probably could have cut like 30 minutes out of this, and it would have been a lot better, honestly, to keep the pacing going.
To keep the pacing faster, exactly.
And, you know, the acting, it usually isn't phenomenal, but yeah, like you said, like, Mayax is fun to watch. Yeah. It's fun to watch Rip Torn kind of, doing his thing.
I like these sword and sandal movies.
Yeah.
I do like them. I think they're fun. I love fantasy. I'm going to like this.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to like it. But I agree. It's not memorable in a lot of scenes. But I do think some of the scenes that I remember are the nostalgic scenes.
I think so, too. Yeah. Those are the ones that stand out to me, like the tree scene with the bat people and the little ring, like you said, stuff like that.
And Kodo and Podo.
Yeah, of course, those animals, the quicksand, Nicole. But yeah, so the Beastmaster for me, I would marginally amass this one. It's not my favorite of the kind of fantasy movies, but there are elements to it that I feel like are unforgettable in my mind that I want to keep around. So
I'm going like to amass it and watch it every decade.
You're going to watch it every decade. Yeah. I feel like that's fair. Yes. Amass it, watch it once a decade, and you might be fine, Nicole. There is a series of Beastmaster movies. There are a couple of sequels. I believe two sequels. But Don Coscarelli sold the rights to it. So basically he had nothing to do with those. A couple of sequels, which I probably saw in my youth, but I have no memory of them at all. And there was even like a TV series that came out of the Beastmaster at one point. I don't know that Mark Singer was involved in the TV series. I feel like maybe he was in like at least one of the sequels, but I could be wrong. I don't remember. But anyway, so the Beastmaster, there's a little bit more to it. If you really love the Beastmaster, the first one, you can seek out the sequels and see if you can find the television series. I don't know, whatever. But yeah, so the Beastmaster, like I said, for me, kind of a marginal amass. Nicole's going to amass it. And, you know, those ferrets are cute.
Yeah.
It was foretold by witches. It was conceived through sorcery. And it was to be destroyed by all that is evil. But the courage of one mortal saved it. And so, into an age of darkness, in a time of mysticism, sacrifice, and plunder, there came the only light. The Beastmaster. Born with the strength of a black tiger, the courage of an eagle, the power that made him more than any hero. More than any lover. He was lord and master over all beasts. He was the Beastmaster. Behold the wonder, the horror, the fantasy, the challenge of the one warrior they called the Beastmaster. Mark Singer is Dar. Tanya Roberts is Carrie. Rip Torn is Mayak. John Amos is Seth. Together they take us on a fascinating journey back into unexplored times. Conquer your fears. Face the unknown. And discover the incredible link between man, animal, and all that is phantasmagorical. In the world of Dungeons, Dragons, and Dar. The Beastmaster. The epic adventure of a new kind of hero.
Nicole, I got a question about this.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. This next movie, it has something, a very crucial element, Nicole, that the Beastmaster does not have.
Okay.
Clash of the Titans does not have this, Nicole.
Okay.
What this movie has,
I think I know where you're going.
An incredible theme song.
That's right. This movie has its own theme song.
It has an actual theme song. And why, Nicole, didn't these other movies... Why didn't the Beastmaster...
I have no idea.
Think about if the Beastmaster had a theme song like this movie, Nicole.
I think it would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Just think about that.
I mean, like, I think everything should have a theme song.
Everything needs a theme song. So, the theme song for this movie, Nicole, is when we were... And, you know, okay, so... We have the Blu-ray release from Mill Creek Entertainment for this movie. And I did one of those things where, like, after we watched the movie, I just kind of left the disc in there and the menu screen came up. And
you're
the
like,
menu screen...
Okay, let's clarify. You do this for every movie.
I do this a lot. I do this a lot. So, the menu screen will just stay on for a while and, you know, the sound just keeps playing.
That's
if
right.
There's music on the menu
screen.
It
will replay the intro a million times.
A million times, yes. So, and for me, repetition, we've said it in the past, repetition is usually very amusing to me. It's very funny. I start to get, like, crazy and get the giggles about repetition.
Well, this time, I kind of went crazy.
You did, too. The
kick. I started to love.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I now absolutely love this theme song.
Me too.
So basically, on the mini screen, there's a loop of a certain segment of the theme song. And my God, it's still stuck in my head.
Me too.
Probably 5 days later.
And if I could sing, I would sing.
You would sing it right now. But there are certain portions of this song that were in that menu music repetition that, we couldn't get over it. Like, we couldn't get over how great they were.
And every time these three tones would come on, I would, like, go crazy.
They'd go and be like, this is the best part. This is the best thing in my life.
This is the best part.
And basically, if you find the song out there, if you listen to the song, and I pulled up, like, there's a YouTube upload of this with, like, the lyrics, and you got to look that up. So basically, what we're talking about here, the movie is called You're the Hunter from the Future. But if you're looking up the YouTube video, look up the one. The one I looked up was Yours World Lyrics. Yours World is apparently like the name of the song. That's what they keep saying in the song. The person who uploaded the video is Korg Khan, K-O-R-G-K-H-A-N. So you can look up that specific one.
Yeah.
But it has the lyrics. And the lyrics, Nicole said, you know, I get the feeling that English isn't really the first language, these people who wrote this. And just based on the lyrics, I think you're absolutely right. And apparently they are. It's a couple of Italian guys, brothers, I assume. It is Guido and Maurizio De Angelis. So they're the people responsible for this song, apparently. And yeah, it doesn't seem like English is their first language, because some of it is just a little bit of like broken English and just is a little strange. But if you're watching this YouTube video with the lyrics, listening to this wonderful song, this amazing, beautiful song, Nicole.
Soundtrack.
Yes. Your favorite part, Nicole, begins at 8 seconds.
Okay.
8 seconds in.
And ends like, then, at, what, 11 seconds?
Oh, I don't know. It goes.
It's only, it's until the first time they say Yours World.
Well, I think they might say Yours World at the beginning of it, before the 8 second mark. But yes, once it hits that 8 seconds, then the next time it says Yours World, that's your favorite part.
That's
something
right.
like that. My favorite part initially that I enjoyed the most was at the, other than like the bass line that's in the part that you like, which is pretty incredible too. But my favorite part was at the 1 minute 17 second mark. That was my favorite part initially. But then, the more I listen to the song, there's this transition that happens at the 1 minute 28 second mark.
Oh my gosh.
And that transition that you just heard, listeners, it gives me goosebumps. It's so good, Nicole, because it transitions and, oh man, it's just wonderful how the drum beats come in behind the Yours World.
You know,
this was like a defining moment in our lives. Yours World, the theme song for You're the Hunter from the Future, this movie from 1983, we didn't know that this would have such an effect on our lives from here on out, Nicole.
The more I heard it, the more I just was like, I love this.
You love
I love this. But I'm like, I think we probably had to have listened to it like 150 times.
We listened to it so many times. So many times.
But it was so funny because it kept getting funnier every time we heard it.
Yes. And
but we're doing other things at first.
Well, you know, I guess. Yeah. Like, yeah, we were looking at, you know, phones or tablets or something. And right. We just kind of kept letting it go. But then the more it went, the more hypnotized we became by Yours World, Nicole. Such a phenomenal piece of music. Absolutely phenomenal. One of the greatest songs of all time. There's no question about it. So definitely, you got to listen to the song. And right now, Nicole, we've just spent more than 6 minutes talking about the song Yours World, the theme song. See, if the Beastmaster had a song, Nicole,
we would have been about hypnotized.
That. Just think about that. So anyway, yeah, you got to check out this song. You got to listen to this. So what we're talking about, Nicole, the movie, beyond the theme song, okay. Nicole, this movie, Yor, the Hunter from the Future. Our friend Emily has a bunny, a rabbit.
A rabbit.
And this bunny's name is May. May, the Queen of the Universe. And if you don't address her as the Queen of the Universe, yeah. She may destroy you.
Yeah, that's right.
So yes, May, you don't want to mess with May. May has eyeliner, like yeah, goth black, eyeliner, goth eyeliner. You don't want to mess with May.
That's
don't,
right.
Don't do it because she'll mess you up, Nicole. Yeah. I've seen video of May trying to like tear someone's pants off because they were like in the way. That's not okay, Nicole. Stay out of May's business. So May's favorite movie.
Is your
the Hunter from the Future.
Okay. Now it makes more sense.
It does. It makes sense. So May loves watching Your on VHS, Nicole. Okay. We don't have the VHS. I hope May's okay with that. We only have the Blu-ray. But yes, Your the Hunter from the Future, May's favorite movie. We had to mention that. Or The Wrath of May. We would have suffered exactly. That. So we don't want to deal with that.
You know, one thing I did not mention is Appa. During Clash of the Titans, Appa was in love with Bubo.
I think Appa the cat was in love with Bubo.
That's right. I totally forgot to mention that.
Well, now we're mentioning it during Yor, and May's going to be upset. So
Sorry, May. I'm sorry.
Whew. Okay, so Yor, the Hunter from the Future, Nicole. I better read the IMDb description here. We should get into that. A warrior seeks his true origins in a seemingly prehistoric wasteland. And that's all you get, Nicole.
That's all you get.
That's all you get for Yor.
Well, Yor, you know, Yor's this, I don't know, blonde, pre-man.
He's not a warrior.
I don't think he's pre-man, but...
He's a
man.
There's some, like, other... Yeah, Yor's the man, Nicole.
Yor's the man.
The man, based on that's the theme right. song. Yor is the man. And I sometimes can't decide if they're saying Yor's the man or Yor's their man. I don't know if it's
but
like...
But he's a man of mystery.
He's a man. He's definitely a man of mystery.
A mystery.
Yes. But yeah, so Yor is played by Reb Brown, Nicole. Reb Brown, he's billed as TV's Captain America. And long before Chris Evans was Captain America in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there were some Captain America TV movies in 1979, Captain America, and then the sequel, Captain America 2, Death Too Soon.
Okay.
And they both star Reb Brown as Captain America. Reb Brown was also in an early 70s favorite of mine that we've talked about 17 or 18 times on the show by now called He's a character in that one as well. But yeah, so Reb Brown is Yor in this movie, Nicole. Reb Brown apparently did all of his own stunts in the movie. This was like a 6-month shoot. I guess like there wasn't a lot of money. They didn't have a lot of money put into it. This is an Italian, French, Turkish production, Nicole. Okay. Didn't have a lot of money. So maybe because of that, it took a long time to shoot. Just a financial issue. I'm not sure what happened, why it was so long. But during the shoot, he had to keep in shape. You know, he had to stay muscled up. But there was no exercise equipment around or anything like that. So basically, like, every other day at least, he would do, like, 1,000 push-ups, 1,000 sit-ups, like, every day or every other day to try to keep in shape. He did all of his own stunts. Reb Brown is apparently a black belt, Nicole, in Shotokan and American, specifically, everyone, American karate.
Okay, yeah. I don't know the differences.
But he's also a purple belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, Nicole.
Okay.
So this guy, you don't want to mess with Reb Brown. He'll mess you up. Yor will mess you up, Nicole.
Okay.
So, Yor, the Hunter from the Future, is from 1983. It is rated rated PG. All these movies are PG, Nicole.
Yeah.
This one's PG. I don't think there was any nudity in this one.
I don't remember.
There's some violence.
You know, but there might have been nudity. A boob slip.
Oh, I think, yes, when the character Kayla is running out of the water at one point.
Kayla,
I don't remember. Maybe they say it both ways. Played by Corinne Clary, runs out of the water on the ocean at the beach one time. Yes, there may have been a boob slip, I think
came out.
Yes. She is also known for starring in Moonraker, the James Bond movie. See, that's weird, too.
There's like three James Bond women this is the in third, each movie.
Yeah, each movie had a Bond girl in it.
Yeah.
So Moonraker from 1979, she was in that one. Boy, this episode is full of surprises, Nicole.
Yeah.
Full of surprises.
It's like
startling, amazing theme songs, Bond
girls. Already squared, and then it was already cubed. Then it was cubed again.
Oh my God. You're getting crazy now. So, this movie, Nicole, it runs 1 hour and 38 minutes. The budget, like we said, I couldn't find a budget, but it was pretty minimal, apparently.
Okay.
Like, it basically cost like nothing to make is what I read at one point. It ended up making in the U.S. $2.8 million at the box office, so not a ton of money. Hopefully it did better on VHS and cable, maybe. I don't know. Like the Beastmaster. But it's directed, Nicole, by Antonio Margheriti. Did you like that one, Nicole?
Yeah.
Yes.
I like it when you try to say Italian things.
I was trying to Italian it up a little
bit,
Nicole.
Right.
Because I'm so Italian. And by so Italian, I mean not at all. But yes, so Antonio Margheriti. Well, he directed some standouts from the 60s. He started directing back in the 60s. Horror Castle, I believe, starring Christopher Lee in 1963. Castle of Blood, starring Barbara Steele, I'm pretty sure, in 1964. And The Long Hair of Death, Nicole, in 1965. Those are kind of some of the standouts. But then he also did some things like Hercules, Prisoner of Evil in 1964, Nicole. How about Snow Devils? In 1967, Mr. Super Invisible. In 1970, Nicole, this is one of my favorites, Mr. Hercules Against Karate in 1973.
Against Karate.
Killer Fish in 1979, Nicole. Here's a title for you, Nicole, a startling title. Car Crash. In 1981. So, maybe perhaps a varied career. I believe he said of Yor, the Hunter from the Future, that he admitted the movie is so bad, but, yeah, he still...
It does have its own theme song,
still appreciates it for what it is, I suppose. But, yes. So, like we said, it's an Italian, French, Turkish production, so there's definitely some dubbing going on here at some points. Apparently, the Italian version runs 1 hour and 38 minutes. It's a little bit longer. The U.S. version that we saw is 1 hour and 29 minutes. I'd say that's probably enough of Yor, honestly.
I'm
that's probably
say
all
it's
you
enough.
Need. But, you know, it's fine. So it was released August 19th of 1983 in the U.S., Nicole. And really, other than the theme song, Nicole, which we've already discussed at length, the first, like, 5 minutes of this movie are absolutely amazing. Like, There's a battle going on with a Triceratops.
Oh, that's right.
And Yor's fighting the Triceratops. Like, the Triceratops is going to mess everybody up. But then right. Yor leaps in out of nowhere with his, like, stone axe.
That's right.
And starts attacking the Triceratops, whacking the Triceratops. And the Triceratops, for a movie with, like, virtually no budget, like, I don't think the dinosaurs in this movie look that bad.
It looked pretty good.
And so he's, like, hacking away at this Triceratops. And, again, back to professional wrestling, Nicole. In wrestling, when someone's face gets bloody, they refer to it as a crimson mask. And, well, the Triceratops, after getting axed in the face a number of times, its face is all bloodied, definitely wearing the crimson mask, Nicole. There's another dinosaur battle later where something similar is happening, and there's a fight going on with the dinosaur. Yeah. That one, too, ends up getting the crimson mask.
Yeah.
And at one point, the character who we haven't mentioned yet, who's kind of the the guardian of Kala or Kala, it's Kala, Craig.
Kala.
Get it right.
Don't say Kala. They never say Kala.
I'm pretty sure if you watch this movie, at least someone says Kala. Nicole doesn't buy it. So anyway, Nicole, man, she's getting pissed about it. She hates the name Kala, apparently. If you're a listener named Kala, fuck you. So, the character Peg is kind of the guardian, played by Luciano Pigazzi. And at one point in the second dinosaur battle, he's an archer. Yeah. And he shoots the dinosaur right in the eye.
Yeah.
Right in the eye with an arrow. And for some reason at that point, I lost it. I thought it was so funny. This poor dinosaur, which is not real, it's a special effect, Nicole, gets shot in the eye by one of these arrows. And yeah, I don't know. For some reason, it was great. But in the first battle, after the Triceratops is killed, immediately after, Yor says to the other people there, help me cut the choice meats. Let's cut the choice meats off of the Triceratops. And we're going to consume it, obviously, Nicole.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So, we meet Kala and Pag, and they're getting attacked by the Triceratops, and Yor comes in to help save them.
Yes.
So yeah. then they take them back to the village. They have, like, a fire.
Yeah.
You know, and, there are these, and like, cook some meat.
Crazy Neanderthals that interrupt the proceedings.
That's
and,
right.
Like, try to, like, steal. I think they're trying to steal all the women.
They steal all the women.
Yeah. Except for, what's her name?
Kala.
Except for her. And she's then, like, totally in love with Yor. And couldn't you be?
She's in love with Yor.
Yes.
And, like, every time Yor, like, goes away from her and, like, says something to her, she's, like, such a sycophant that she's, like, snaps to attention.
She just cannot get enough of Yor's masculinity,
she is like,
Nicole.
Whoa. And at one point, we were making fun of Kala because I'm like, come in, Yor.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. And basically, there's a lot of jealousy. There's this other character that pops up named Roa, played by Aishi Gull. Something like that. I have no idea how to pronounce that name. I'm sorry if you're Roa out there somewhere listening. But anyway, this other character pops up and tries to, like, get in on some of Yor's affection, right? And there's a lot of jealousy.
Yeah.
It gets nasty, Nicole. Yeah. At one point, they start having, like, a fight.
But, you know, but I like to go back to this.
Peg
says, Kala, men can have more than one wife.
People in our village have, men in our village have more than one wife.
And I was like, this isn't, you know, polygamy here.
You know?
I mean, apparently you can do it there. But Kala wasn't
She's
having any
okay
of
it.
She's not okay with it.
She's absolutely not okay with it. So yeah, there's some fighting going on. Oh, things get ugly, Nicole. It gets ugly. But I think that's kind of broken up by the second dinosaur battle or something, if I remember correctly. But anyway, so Nicole, the what is your favorite part of the movie, other than the theme song, Nicole?
Okay.
Let's talk about your favorite part of the movie.
This is my absolute favorite part. So, Kala does get kidnapped by the Neanderthals. So they take her back to their hideout, which is, you know, in a rocky cave-like thing.
Yeah.
But, so Pag and Yor are doing a stakeout.
Yeah.
Seeing how they can sneak in and rescue her. Well, Pag goes, "Watch out! There's a beast of the night!" And then, so Yor takes Peg's bow and arrow and shoots it.
When we were watching it, I, you know, in my mind, I'm like, that's a kite. It looks like
a kite. It looks like a kite.
Like this flimsy kite.
So basically,
kind of like a bat creature.
It's a but giant hang glider.
Yeah, a big glider. Yes.
That has like moth features.
Uh-huh.
Like a giant mothman. So then you're hang glides into the Neanderthal's lair.
Into the stronghold.
On this dead
beast
of the night.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
It's fantastic. It's an amazing sequence. Yes, there's no question.
And it happens so fast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You kill it. Here it is. You kill it. It's a kite. Then, wait a second. I'm riding this dead thing
I can hang glide on this.
Oh, man. It is fantastic.
It's very, very corny.
Oh, no. What are you talking about? It's amazing, Nicole. And then also there's like this one point that I missed it. I don't know if I was eating or something at the time. I missed it or writing notes or something. And you like, you made me like rewind it. There's like these guys and they're like all like, I don't know, like covered in mud or something. They look all like, I don't know. They're like,
it's like a very dusty, like dirty area. Like there's no vegetation, so it's all dust and
dirt.
Yes,
dust, rock, and yeah.
So they're huddled in a clump of five people, huddled
up against a wall,
like against a wall in a mound.
You said like they look like a pile of crap. I think is you said that looked like a pile of crap, but they were like people.
Right, I just meant that looked like a pile of, like, debris. No,
I know what you meant, but it was funny how you said it when we were watching it. So, Nicole, this movie, then, you're the hunter from the future. We're talking about these elements of sort of, like, almost like prehistoric times or
Absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely.
But suddenly, then, it either evolves or devolves, depending on your point of view, into this sort of science fiction mess at the end.
Exactly.
So apparently, yes, the director, and what was his name again, Nicole? Antonio Margheriti. I think he directed and also worked on special effects on a prior movie called, I think it was called The Humanoid or something like that, which was done kind of just prior to this. And a lot of the like costumes for like these sort of future sci-fi people
you
were
think
reused.
Were they reused from that,
or they were like leftovers? So you've got this character that's introduced who's like ends up becoming the main villain, the Overlord Nicole, played by John Steiner, who's in Dario Argento's Tenebrae in 1982, but he's also in a lot of other things over the years too. But yeah, this character, the Overlord, and as I'm watching this, like he does talk like in the third person sometimes.
Yeah.
And he's also one of those like cartoon comic book villains that is kind of like talking to himself, revealing his plans to himself, and by doing
talks,
so also telling
speaks,
you the viewer.
He speaks his inner monologue.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's okay. Like speaking. And I, you know, I'm thinking, you know, wouldn't it be great to just like go up to somebody? You go up to Yor, you go up to somebody and just introduce yourself. Hey, I'm the Overlord. Wouldn't that be great to just introduce yourself as the Overlord?
My name's the Overlord.
I'm the Overlord. How you doing? Not just Overlord. No, no. The Overlord.
The Overlord.
Yes, the Overlord.
You can call me the Overlord.
Yes. Yes, that's right. At some point, it's revealed that Yor's real name is Galahad, and he's like the son of Asgard. So, like, there's a lot of mythologies kind
of
getting like, mixed up here.
Right, I pointed
over.
That out during the viewing.
And yeah, so, like, he actually is from, like, this future time or something. And, yeah, there's, like, these science fiction elements start getting mixed in. And things, like I said, evolve or devolve, depending on your point of view. It gets a little crazy at the end. I feel like, for me, the beginning is much better than the end. But, you know, whatever. At one point, there's this whole, like, maze of mirrors. Like, if you go to, like, a carnival or fun house or something like that, you might get, like, the Hall of Mirrors, Nicole.
Yeah.
Basically, that's used here. And what's the woman's, what's the character's name?
Kala goes nuts.
Yeah, she goes wrong. She's, like, she's panicking in the Hall of Mirrors because she can't find her way out. And then finally, she finds Yor and everything's okay, Nicole.
Yeah.
But, yes, the movie, Yor, the Hunter from the Future, Nicole. What do you think of this one overall? What do you think here?
I think this is a fantastically fun watch, but you cannot take it serious.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
I mean, it is not one that you're going to sit down and watch seriously and critique. You have to have fun with this.
It'll
be the absolute most horrible experience of your life.
Yeah, if you're expecting this to be like a serious movie, no, you're going to be sadly mistaken. And yes, you're probably not going to enjoy yourself. If you go into it thinking this could be ridiculous fun, then you might have a good time, because I had a very good time watching it. I think you did too, at least for the most part. But yeah, it was very funny at times. I think this came at a time when we needed some ridiculous laughs, and we got it. We got it out of Yor. There's no question about it. So, yeah, it was enjoyable for what it was, Nicole. There's no way I cannot amass this movie, Nicole, because of just the theme song.
Exactly.
And like I said, like the first 5 minutes, even if you just have it, and watch like the first 5 minutes, the Triceratops battle.
I think I'm just gonna put it on and turn the menu on.
Yes, that's fine too. But yeah, so Yor the Hunter from the Future. I definitely got a kick out of it. It's actually, Nicole, based on an Argentinian comic series.
Okay.
Called Yor the Hunter. So that's where it comes from, Nicole. Argentina. We have Argentina to blame for Yor.
So I would definitely amass this. But like I said, with Beastmaster, it's not, I wouldn't really watch it all the time.
You're not gonna watch it all the time.
I might not watch it for 15 years.
Oh my
gosh.
But
I'm gonna listen to the song.
I don't know what May's gonna think about that, Nicole. But yes, the theme song is the ultimate, Nicole.
It's pretty great.
I'm gonna listen to that theme song a lot.
Me too.
Gonna put it on my phone. I'm gonna listen to it in the car.
I'm gonna hear it.
I'm gonna listen to this song a lot, Nicole, and probably never ever tire of it, because it's so amazing.
There must be some place in this world where we can live in peace with our people.
He is from a future world. Trapped in another time. Searching for his past. A hunter of incredible power and strength. In his quest for his origin, he and the woman he loves must fight hostile tribes, battle deadly beasts, and try to survive the violent forces of a newly born Earth. He is the warrior known as Yor. His medallion holds the key to his destiny. His courage makes him master of a world in chaos. His enemy uses the weapons of tomorrow to enslave a primitive planet. But his passion for freedom will set his people free. Yor, the Hunter from the Future.
Nicole, this is our closing.
Close it up.
We're going to close this episode. We're going to wrap it up here.
I had a good time with the sword and sandal movies.
Some of these swords and sandals, you enjoyed them, huh?
I really liked them.
Yes, we had a good time. It was, like I said, a nice little departure from all the 70s horror that we were watching. But, Nicole,
we'll have to go back.
Here's the thing. We've got some feedback to talk about from those episodes. We're going to do that in the next episode.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about some feedback from those 70s horror episodes. And we've got a little follow-up that we have to do that we talked about. We talked about this, that we owe it to a certain movie, Nicole.
We do.
John Carpenter's Halloween from 1978. We're going to do a Halfway to Halloween episode that we hope to release here at the end of April or the beginning of May. And it's going to be Halfway to Halloween.
Halfway to Halloween.
And like I said before, because we always do the festival, the A to Z of Horror Festival in October, it seems like there's never an opportunity to talk about the Halloween series. So the idea is we're going to talk about Halloween 1978, and then if we survive to next year, halfway to Halloween, maybe we'll talk about like Halloween 2 and 3, kind of like we're doing with the Friday the 13th movies.
Absolutely.
If a Friday the 13th pops up on the calendar. So that's the idea here. So we're going to cover John Carpenter's Halloween 1978 with our Halfway to Halloween special, which will be our next episode, Nicole. So the listeners can gear up for that, prepare for that, because we love Halloween. All the listeners love Halloween too, don't they?
Of course.
What the hell's the matter with them if they don't? So, yeah, Halfway to Halloween, it feels good when you're on the way to Halloween, Nicole. So we're going to do that for the next episode. And I don't know, that's really all I have to say here, Nicole. That's okay. All I've got. But yeah, I enjoyed doing this episode too, The Swords and Sandals. It was nice. A little fun. We had a good time. Certainly with your and that theme song.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Well, Nicole, let's wrap things up here so we can have some little snacky snacks.
Okay.
So, Nicole, do you know how the listeners can find us on social media?
I do. How about Facebook?
Facebook. Well, they can find us there on the page A Cure for the Common Craig.
Instagram.
Instagram. They can find us there at Cure for the Common Craig.
Twitter.
Twitter. You can find us on Twitter simply at Common Craig.
And our website.
The website, Nicole, is cureforthecommoncraig.com or commoncraig.com. And when you go to that website, you click on the Mass or Murder button on the splash page, and then you can find all the episodes linked in there, easily accessible.
Easily for you, accessible. The listener. That's right. Yes.
And we thank you, the listener, for listening. We always appreciate the feedback. Keep sending feedback. We like that. We've gotten some recent feedback on Instagram as well. That's been nice, some comments and things like that. So that's always fun to see. I know that our listener, Beth, who's also our friend, and she has the rats.
That's right.
That we talked about before with our rats all... adorable animals all out attack. Oh my gosh, Nicole, I almost botched it.
Oh, man.
We talked about the rats back then. That was like a year ago, Nicole. But she basically suggested that we should do like, you know, a whole separate like series of shows where you watch kind of the sleazy, like trashy movies and just rip them to shreds, Nicole.
Just rip them to shreds.
Because she definitely appreciated that. So she got a kick out of you destroying the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and was kind of disappointed when you didn't get a chance to do it with The Hills Have Eyes, quite frankly. Oh. So, yeah. So we should have talked about that one. So, yeah, you could have torn that one up.
I don't like that guy.
Yeah, you don't want to watch that. You don't want to watch that one. Anyway, thanks to the listeners, like I said, for listening. And what do you want to say to them, Nicole?
Thanks for listening.
Good night, listeners.
Like that. You put me on the spot.
You messed it all up. What did you think we were doing? I didn't want you to tell them, like, your social security number or something.
You made it hard. You made this weird and awkward.
Ridiculous.
Thanks for listening.
Good night, listeners.